This Week in Radio Tech, episode 278, is brought to you by the Axia Fusion AOIP Mixing Console. Fusion, where design and technology become one. By the Telos VX multi-studio, multi-line talk show system. VX is the first broadcast phone system natively supporting VoIP and SIP. And by Lavo and the Crystal Clear Virtual Radio Console. Crystal Clear is the console with a multi-touch touchscreen interface. Hey, the 139th Convention of the Audio Engineering Society begins next week in New York City. Plus, we'll commemorate the 50th anniversary of the Master FM antenna on the Empire State Building with a big party. Guest speakers, presentations, it's all about furthering the state of the art in audio gathering and reproduction. David Bialik and Scott Fibers join Chris Tobin and me. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. I'm glad to be here. This is the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower and everything in between in radio stations, which are quickly becoming more than just audio providers. We've got video coming out of a lot of radio stations, have for years too, if in some markets like Chris Tobin in New York City. But man, we might have to change the name of the show This Week in, I don't know, technical content creation or multimedia. We'll figure out something. But our hearts in radio, that's where a lot of us got started. Hey, I'm Kirk Harnack. As I said, I'm the host of the show. Also, my co-host from New York City, the best-dressed engineer in radio. And today he is an art aficionado standing in front of a beautiful painting. It's Chris Tobin. Hello, Chris. Welcome in.
Hello, Kirk. Yes, it's the art form. It's the fall. It's autumn. I thought I'd do something with the colors. I think there's some orange and color, you know, the colors of the fall. Why not have something different?
You know, the redneck in me wants to ask, what is that?
I have no idea. It's a very nice painting. It's a raised, the paint itself is raised. It's actually
it looks three-dimensional. Yeah, it's
yes,
got a
yes,
there's a absolutely. Lot of oil on that.
Oh yes, it's very nice.
Good deal. Hey, there's the famous two shot. I love it. I'm never sure where to look though. How about if I just keep looking at the camera? Our show today, here's what's coming up. We've got David Bialik. I did an interview with him yesterday. We're going to play that where we're talking about a really cool event in New York City. I teased on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn, I teased that David Bialik has actually made arrangements to turn the Empire State Building blue and white next week for a little while. And there's going to be a synchronizing of the lights and some music on the radio in New York City next week, thanks to David Bialik. He had help. It takes a village. I think Scott Shannon got involved. That's right. Scott Shannon got involved with making all that happen. So that's going to be cool. He's going to tell us about the event coming up. Also, we'll have a few notes about the AES convention coming up end of next week. And Chris Tobin will have, as we mentioned, some fall goodies for us. What's happening around New York City? What do engineers get busy with? And the author of this calendar is going to be here. Scott Fibush will be making an appearance on our show to tell you about what's going on. He's heavily involved with next week, too. I think maybe Scott got the blue lights and Bialik got the white lights. So we'll check in with that. Our show is brought to you in part by the folks at Axia. Let me tell you about them first, and then we'll move on with our interview with David Bialik. The folks at Axia want you to know about the Fusion console. You may have seen something on Facebook that ran, I think, yesterday and today. Back to the Fusion. Yes, it's 2015. Back to the Fusion. A little play on words there in the movie. Well, the Fusion console is the next generation of audio over IP audio consoles from the people who invented audio over IP for broadcast, and that's Axia. Axia had to invent some technology because, hey, 15 years ago, the existing technologies that were out there for putting audio over IP, they wouldn't work for radio. They were not low latency enough. And at the time, they weren't routable. So, you know, they were for hooking up conference rooms to media centers in hotels and other venues and recording studios. But they weren't what broadcasters needed. So the folks at Axia invented LiveWire. And just about 2 years ago, Axia introduced LiveWire Plus. So those things tie in with the new AES 67 standard. Well, let me tell you about the Fusion console. If you're already familiar with the larger console from Axia, the Element, then you already know about 80% about what the Fusion console is. It's modular. I mean, there are literally 15,000 to 20,000 different consoles you can build with the modules available, different sizes, different modules, different layouts. I think you do a lot of powers of two to come up with that number, but there's a lot of different consoles that you can come up with to make your Fusion. And that means if you need a console with, what, 6 faders? No problem. You can do that. You need a console with 26 faders? No problem. You can do that. In fact, I think you can build a console upwards close to 40 faders or so. It's a lot. You can also outfit your Fusion console just the way you want it. Hey, this is a class console. So you can put in a telephone control module right there, and it's got faders built right into that for telephone control and for running the volume of your callers up and down. And you can easily see, you know, which lines are ringing in, which are on hold, what's the next line that you should take on the air based on the amount of time on since it's been screened, that kind of thing. There's also intercom available for this console. So from the front of the console, right convenient, right there, beautiful OLED displays, you can touch a button and talk to the person over in the AM control room, or you can talk to somebody in the newsroom. You can push a button and talk to a reporter who's coming in maybe by satellite or by codec or by whatever means they are. You can push a button and talk right back to them. All kinds of options with the IP-based intercom. And this is cool. The intercom system available with Axia Livewire, that intercom system is full audio bandwidth. Full audio bandwidth. That means, let's say that you have a reporter in the newsroom and they're working and it's time for a news update, a little tease before the top of the hour. Well, they have a little intercom module on their desk. They can even have the soft intercom that runs on their PC. And they talk in their microphone, and they're connected at full audio bandwidth, 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz, and you can put them on the air from your audio console, from your Fusion audio console. And they sound great. I mean, it's only limited by the quality of the microphone that you put on the intercom at the other end. You can put a, you know, regular intercom mic, or you put something really good there if you like. So there's all kinds of options available there. The Fusion console, it's a beautiful OLED displays. Every display shows you the name of the source coming in. It also shows you the confidence meter coming in and the talkback or the backfeed levels going back out. If it's a source that can be backfed, like headphones of some talent, or a codec, or a telephone hybrid, or again, a satellite feed with maybe an IFB auto connect rung in by telephone. So many options. So cool. Check it out if you would. I'd be grateful if you would. I know the folks at Axie would love to introduce you to this console. A bunch of them are on the air already, and it's outselling the Element console now by something like 4-1. Check it out at TelosAlliance.com. You can go to Axia Audio. That's the old URL. It'll take you to Telos Alliance. TelosAlliance.com, and then click on Axia and look for the Fusion console. And awesome. Awesome console. Man, wish I could have one at my radio station. I've got an Element, but we'll upgrade to a Fusion eventually. All right. Our show, number 278 this week in Radio Tech. We're talking about what's happening in New York City. Chris, you're going to be around in the city next week, aren't you?
Yes, I'll be around. The Fall Classic, the New York Mets have made it into the World Series, so that's a big thing this coming weeks. So the Halloween will be very fun, and there's the Greenwich Village Parade, the Halloween parade that always happens. A lot of the broadcast engineers are getting ready for those broadcasts for both television and radio. It draws some of the best visuals, so television works out well. And then by halfway through the evening, the audio portion of the event becomes very entertaining, so radio benefits. It's fun for all, both visually and audibly.
That sounds interesting. Is there typically a 7-second delay on broadcast from that parade?
Well, everybody has pretty much a delay of some sort these days. Yeah. So yeah, there's always there's protection. But if it's a news event, you sort of protect it. If it's not, then you got to watch out. But yeah.
We'll hear more about that coming up in a few minutes, plus the other preparations that engineers in a busy place like New York have to make for all the sporting events and the outdoor events. And I'm sure you got all kinds of fall festivals and probably farmers markets and that kind of stuff. You know, hey, farmers markets are everywhere, but man, you crowd, what, 12 million people into the New York City area, and you end up with a lot of events going on in a pretty short time and a short distance from each other. Hey, but first, I got a chance to talk to David Bialik. Let's not waste any time. And by the way, at the end of the interview, we had a little technical glitch. So if you my picture will go out, and then I'll take it up from the end of the interview. So let's just run to it. Here's me and David. Let's go.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in. I am on the line here on a Hangout with David Bialik, who is putting together some fantastic sessions at the AES. Hey, David, welcome in. How are you?
Oh, hello, Kirk. I'm looking forward to the AES, which starts October 29th here in New York City. We got some great events, and as a matter of fact, a guy named Kirk Harnack is going to be hosting one of the sessions as well.
Well, I'm doing one on Saturday afternoon at 3:15 on the subject of remote audio using IP technologies, however you may be able to get it there. I've got a great bunch of panelists. We'll get to that in a few minutes. David, there, you know, with every AES convention, there are a number of special events that come along. And several times you've been involved in setting these events up. It's been a commemoration of this or the anniversary of that. And you put together the most, you know, the first time I went to one, I didn't know what to expect. You exceeded my expectations, though, fabulously, in terms of the quality of the event, the speakers, the historical perspective and information that was given. And this year, there is a really special event on Thursday night. What's that date? October what?
Thursday, October 29th.
Okay.
At 6:30 p.m. Well, the event starts at 6:30 p.m. And it's going to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the master FM antenna on the Empire State Building. And this, so the thought of doing this started around I think it was 2 years ago. I was sitting in a session at the NAB, and Peggy Miles and Rob Bertrand and Shane O'Donohue were up on a panel talking about the history of the master antenna. And considering I had used to work on a station that had an antenna on the old Alford antenna, I said, this is really interesting. And then they started saying the dates, and I said, hold it. That means that this year is going to be the 50th. And okay, the worst thing you can ever do is give David an idea. I decided to put a session together, and we got some great people. Scott Feibusch and I put it together, and we have Andy Lancet, who's the historian for WNYC and New York Public Broadcasting, Shane O'Donohue, who's the director of broadcasting from Empire State Building, Tom Silliman, who runs ERI and is a legend, and Bob Tarsio, former chief engineer of WLTW, has been around broadcasting forever and now president of BDI, all to talk about it. And then, and as you know, the audience is going to be amazing on that because you're going to have all the history there. And I said, gee, that's great. We got this. And I had the session wrapped up. It was probably around January of this year. I said, okay, I got some time. Maybe I can make this a little special. And so it would have been sufficient just to do this session. Then I said, okay, let's try having it at the Empire State Building.
Oh.
And they have a conference center. So Shane O'Donohue went to his bosses and so forth, and we got the conference center up on the Empire State Building. Now, that's great. And I said, wouldn't it be great if we can go outside afterwards and see some of the and have the chiefs there and maybe go through the transmit? That was great. And that would have been sufficient. So we keep loading this up. Then we decide, okay, let's go for the long shots now. So on October 29th, the building is going to be lit in blue and white for in honor of the AES and 50th anniversary of the master antenna.
Wait, you're getting the lights on Empire changed for commemorating this event?
Yes. okay. Now, that would have been sufficient. And then Peggy Miles, who helped arrange this whole thing, said, hey, David, let's make sure that we have some food and drinks up there. And you're going to tell everybody next time what she prepared for up there, but that would have been sufficient. Then we said, okay, this is really great. Then Empire said, okay, since you're lighting the building, there's going to be a lighting ceremony at 10 in the morning to commemorate this event. Now, that'll be sufficient. And I said, great. And so this event is started snowballing into a monster. Then we decided, okay, what can I do to make this really special? And of course, I was like listening to some old music on my stereo over the summer. And I said, gee, Steely Dan's FM, no static at all. And I said, wouldn't it be great if we can do a light synchronization to Steely Dan's FM before they light before the tower lights go to blue and white? So with a lot of negotiation and a lot of help from the Empire State Building, at 7 o'clock on October 29th, CBS FM is going to have Scott Shannon, who a man who has marked his career in New York, especially saying from the Empire State Building, is going to say a few words and announce Steely Dan's FM, and there's going to be a light synchronization on the Empire State Building, you know, for the length of the song. So now, is that sufficient?
Wait, there's more. Now how much would you pay?
I know. I feel like a car salesman at this point. So, and this, the sad thing about this, and this is the sad thing, attendance to the session is going to be limited, only because the conference center is not as large as the Javits Center, obviously. Yeah. So if anybody wants to come, they must go to the tech tour desk at the AES convention at the Javits Center. Now, even though the convention starts on the 29th, the registration booths are open on the 28th as well. And you register for the convention, whether you have a free pass or a paid pass, I don't care. You then go to the tech tour desk and sign up.
Okay.
And like I said, it's going to be first come, first serve, and I hope to see you there.
All right. So first come, first serve. About how many people will you be able to accommodate? 50, 70?
We're figuring 75.
Okay. All right.
Unfortunately, that is the one limiting factor on an event that really had no limits at this point. But this is going to be the highest AES has ever gone.
So the event itself, for people who do get registered at the tech tour desk, the event starts at what time?
Okay. At 6:30, mm-hmm. People are going to gather to watch the lighting. And then at 7 o'clock, the lighting will be at 7. And then so from anywhere from 7:05 on, people are going to gather at the Empire State Building, and there's going to be security to get up there. So no one should have this idea of just showing up. You have to be registered to go.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're not going to get in. Empire State Building security is tight for very many good reasons.
Yeah.
And they are a very good host to us for this event.
Okay. Okay. And so people will – now, when you say gather for the lighting, you mean gather outside on the sidewalk?
Some people gather in lighting. There's talk that there's going to be a gathering at some rooftop bars, that everything is still in the works on that. But you can literally walk outside the Javits Center and look up, and you'll see that lighting.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, viewing it from a bit away would probably be a better idea. So the
program, you cannot see the lighting when you're on the building. So there is a little logistic issue there, and we're not going to be like in in airplanes and have King Kong fling us around. We're gonna just watch the lighting and then do it. And it was really great. CBS FM was so excited about helping us with the event, and our good friend Rob Bertrand and the crew there really helped out in making this happen.
So the program that's going on in the conference room itself,
What's going to be discussed there? Who will be speaking?
Well, Scott Feibusch and I are going to be moderating. And like I said, you have Andy Lanzett, Shane O'Donohue, Tom Silliman, Bob Tarsio, and the guest list is a who's who in broadcasting. And we are going to seed the room and make sure there's a lot of people that should be there are going to be there. And I know for a fact that your boss is going to be there, Kirk.
Yeah. Frank Foti knows something about the Alford antenna. By the way, tell me about, this is the 50th anniversary of the master antenna.
Yes.
Was the one that we know as the Alford the first master antenna there?
We believe it was, number one, it's the first master in on Empire. We believe it's the first master in the U.S. And I've gotten questioning statements whether it was the first master in the world or not. I'm not sure of that, so I'm not going to say that. But it definitely was probably one of the first, and it was probably one of the biggest, and it was probably the first to serve the major metropolitan area that is the number one DMA in the United States.
Now, that Alford antenna was, I'm guessing it was in use for, what, 18 or 20 years, and then they moved to a newer master antenna.
Technically, it's still able to be used. It's now backup.
Yeah.
It was put up in 50 years ago, and back in the late 80s, they started talk about putting a new master on, and they did. And the new master is now the main master, but the Alford is still the backup.
Now, the Alford, that's that one that's two rings all the way around
the observation deck.
Yeah.
Has little right angles sticking out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's
I believe there's 16 elements.
Looks like more than that, but you may be exactly right.
I'm not exactly sure. And I'm not going to be the one to go out and count.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, so that's great. Check in at the tech tour desk at AES the moment you arrive. Do that first. You can even do it the day during exhibitor setup, right?
Yes. Come the 28th. You're smarter to do that. And plus the fact, if you're planning on going to the convention, whether just for exhibits or for full sessions and stuff, it is much better to register on the 28th when there are very little lines than when there are lines going all over the place. And why waste the time when there's great lectures and stuff going on?
Yeah.
It's better to be prepared beforehand. But then I'm a Boy Scout. I like
I'm not arriving till that night. So me and the family are arriving that 28th at night. So I'll have to register absolutely first thing on Thursday morning, I suppose.
Okay, and I hope to see you there and at the event, and I hope some of your Twitter audience will join us.
And everyone's welcome until space runs out, which will be pretty quick.
Right, so. And they must have a ticket because the Empire State Building security will not let you in without a ticket.
Yeah. So, hey, let's move on to the other part, the part that we usually talk about when you come on TWRT, and that is the broadcast and streaming sessions, the track, as you might call it, because there are a number of sessions that have to do with broadcast audio and streaming media. And can you we don't have a lot of time left, but can you give us a rundown of what the sessions are? Hey, we already know that Kirk Harnack is moderating one of those sessions. It's on Saturday, which is Halloween Day at 3:15. Is mine the last session of the track at that point?
No, it is not. And actually, after that session, I'm producing another special event, which is an audio performance that's going to be held at the Dolby Theater. And there's going to be some great actors. It's going to be called Stories for the Ears, Live Audio Drama and Narration. And we have Barbara Rosenblatt, who was in Orange is the New Black. You know, remember Miss Rosa?
Yeah.
We have Simon Jones, who was in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and many other actors that are going to be putting together this event, and they're going to show how they do the sound effects, and they do an amazing show, and that's going to be at the Dolby screening room, and that you also need to get a ticket for beforehand at the Tech Tours desk as well, because there there is also a limit of 75 people coming into that room.
Okay, and that event, again, is called what?
It's Stories for the Ears, the live audio drama and narration, and that's 8 o'clock on Saturday night, Halloween night. And you can or can't come in costume. It's fine. I was thinking of dressing up as Kirk Harnack. I don't.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
And that's a great event. And I sort of outdid myself on special events because on Friday, right in the middle of the day at 1:45, we're having a technical session on the production of A Prairie Home Companion.
Oh, really? Okay. How long has that show been going on? 20 plus years? 30?
Not exactly sure. But the really nice thing is this is the last year of Garrison Keillor. So we're going to have people that were it's put together by John Holt, who was with the show when it first started.
Ah.
And we have the current staff. And they're all going to talk about everything from how Tom Keith used to do the sound effects live to what they do with the pre-recordings and everything. And let's face it, it's a one-of-a-kind show nowadays in the United States.
And, you know, you brought up three special events that you're working on or working with. And, you know, a lot of folks, including myself, have been under the impression that the AES convention is, like most conventions, it's exhibits and sessions. And that's pretty much it. But these special events are so audio-oriented, and they give you a really in-depth look at a particular phase or area or scenario or task or section of the audio industry between 50 years of broadcasting master antenna to the Dolby Theater performance where they're going to show that, you know, name actors are going to show all these things. And then the one on Friday that you just mentioned, the tech session about how they produce Prairie Home Companion. These are fantastic. These are once in a lifetime events.
Yeah. I sort of outdid myself this year. I sort of, whenever they ask me to volunteer, and it's not like I'm given this job every year. Every year they ask me to join the committee and do it because it's not a given, even though I have done it for the last 28 years. I have a ball doing it, and we also have some great technical sessions. I have John Storick talking about building streaming facilities. We have John Keane talking about running a session on streaming audio from the cloud. Mm-hmm. We're on the cutting edge there. And we're also going to have a session for loudness for streaming, something that came out this week. I don't know if your viewers can see this.
Yeah, I see it.
This is the brand new technical document, recommendations for loudness of audio streaming and network file playback. Now, I'm one of the co-chairs of the Broadcast and Transmission Committee, Technical Committee for the AES, and I put together a subcommittee, which I co-chaired, but basically it was run by Bob Katz. And we got a who's who involved on putting together a recommendation. It's not a standard yet. It's right now it's a recommendation, and at least it's going to start the discussion because we don't need a loudness war in streaming. We don't need, with various injection points and so forth, different levels. It's basically, and we're doing this before a Calm Act has to happen for streaming. So it's really important. So that's happening. We have Steve Lampin, I'm sure, guy, you must have had him on tour, and I'm not sure.
Yes, I have. Yeah, I want to have him back again. He's agreed to come back on again. We just haven't gotten around to scheduling him.
He's chairing a session of Audio and IP. Are we there yet?
Ah, yes. And yes, we are. But yeah, good subject, yeah.
His session is all over the place on IP implementation and so forth. I'm really looking forward to that one. Then David Lair is putting in a session, audio measurement for stream and broadcast. There's been a lot of talk, especially about a certain processor that was named after a Frenchman, now we can talk about watermarking audio and so forth. And it'll be really interesting. And I think our buddy Frank is on that panel as well. So we also have a tour of WNYC and WQXR, New York Public Radio.
Really? When is that? When is that?
That's going to be Friday, 1:15 to 4:45. We have a session on audio for adaptive streaming, understanding HLS dash and HTML5.
Yeah.
That I think it should be required attendance for anybody that's going to be doing any streaming in the near future.
I just did a demo of that technology at the NAB radio show, and I just touched the surface. It's a whole new world of streaming, and it's really exciting because I think it's a smarter way to do streaming than we've been doing it. And I believe the world is going to move toward that. It's going to give audio only content providers and streamers the same benefits that video streamers have had for some years, like Netflix and others, where the stream rate is adaptive toward your connection. And so you can always get a picture, or in our case, always get audio, even if it has to be a low bit rate for a few minutes or a few seconds. As soon as your bit rate availability goes back up, if you're in a better area, if you're mobile or something like that, then your stream rate can go back up. So it's an amazing technology, and I've got my toe wet in it, and it's very cool. So now, yeah, encourage people to go to that.
After that session?
And there we go. That's the end of the video. We had a technical problem there at the end. I think my computer just got tired of working on that. So David, just to wrap up what David Bialik and I were talking about, a couple more sessions to mention. And there are a ton of sessions just in the broadcast and streaming media track. If you want to know more about this, best way, go to aes.org and click on the 139th International AES Convention. As we were talking about there, I'm hosting a session on Saturday, October 31st at 3:15 p.m. called Broadcast and Streaming Media, Integrating Mobile Telephony and IP in Broadcast. And some big names that you know are going to be on the panel there, including Chris Tobin, Andrew Zarian will be on the panel, and Paul Schulens, for example, will be there. Dave Immer will be there. He runs a company called Digiphone, and more. Scott Peterly will be there as well, and another that I'm not remembering right now. So, by the way, if you go to the AES.org website, go to this convention and just click on the super calendar, or I think they call it that, the calendar that lists everything that's going on. Oh my goodness! No matter what you do in audio, this convention has got it for you. From broadcast what we do to the world of sound effects to you know the music and the audio that's in gaming, it's just an incredible array of stuff, you know, to fine arts recording, I can't say enough good things about it. It's really amazing, and I'll be looking forward to seeing everybody there. Hey, so coming up on this show, hang on, we've got Scott Feibusch. He's standing by. Also, his wife, Lisa, is standing by, so we'll have a surprise message from her. Chris Tobin is also standing by to talk to us about what's going on in New York City in the world of broadcast engineering. Yes, the guy who creates this calendar will be on very shortly. Our show, This Week in Radio Tech, moving right along here and brought to you by the folks at Telos and the Telos VX. What's the VX? Well, we haven't talked about it in a while here on the show. The Telos VX is a multi-line and multi-studio talk show system. You can get your phone calls coming into all your studios. And hey, yeah, who's not doing that now anyway if you're running a broadcast facility? I just talked to an engineer today, though. Several of his colleagues in other cities have already switched over to VX, and they're already seeing big savings in their phone bills, and they're enjoying better clarity of the phone calls that are on the air. So, and he's about to do that too. He's planning his Telos VX phone installation right now. Now, you don't have to have an Axia installation in order to install a VX. Probably half of the Telos VX phone systems that get installed at stations that don't otherwise use Axia consoles or such. The Telos VX system is designed to work with any consoles, and it's designed to work with a variety of different incoming telephone lines, although we highly recommend that you go ahead and make the jump over to SIP. to voice over IP SIP, native SIP, just coming right into your building, either through a major telco supplier or an alternative telco supplier or an internet-based SIP provider. There's all different options for doing this, depending on what you want to spend, what you want to invest, how much money you want to save, and what your call volume is, and you know what your comfort level is with either your internet provider or fiber coming in the building, or if you want to keep what you're using now. Maybe you're using PRI lines to bring phone calls in. There are plenty of videos that we have. They're linked from the Telos website. You can go to the webpage I'm looking at right now at telosalliance.com. Go to Telos products. Look for the VX phone system. There you go. That webpage right there at telosalliance.com. And if you scroll down the right-hand side, you'll see several videos describing VX. Over on the right-hand side, there's the Telos VX webinar. That's called The Future of Broadcast Phones is Here Now. There's Telos VX telco and SIP connections. This is where I explain how to take SIP connections and the different kinds that are available from different telephony providers and how to bring those into your Telos VX system. There's also one called Telos VX in 10 minutes or less. This is where our company founder, Steve Church, and one of our top technicians, R&D guys, Maris Sprancis from Latvia, they talk together on this video about bringing the Telos VX into your facility. There's also a video about lines, studios, and shows. So it may be a little confusing. Hey, I got this Telos VX. What goes in the studios? Well, the answer is very little goes in the studios. And this this video helps make that clear. And then there's another video where in which a guy named Derek Murphy discusses the Telos VX system. So lots to see there. There's a brochure, of course, FAQs, a system selection guide to help you compare the capabilities of different Telos talk show systems. And if you use, for example, a gateway device to bring phone lines in, Telos has often recommended the Patton telco gateways, and those are discussed on there as well. So, hey, if you've got two studios or 20 studios, the Telos VX can really help you out. And you know, economically speaking, the Telos VX becomes viable at typically at about three studios. So if you've got three control rooms or a couple control rooms and a production room, if you've got that much, you really need to look at the Telos VX system to see about bringing SIP natively into your talk show systems and getting people on the air, getting, hey, every single caller gets Omnia processing on the call. Every single call gets his own mix minus. It's conferencing is terrifically easy to do. You literally can conference several people onto one fader and never worry about the volume because everybody is audio processed. So slick. Oh, free call screening software comes along with the system, and you're going to love it. I highly recommend it, the Telos VX system from my friends at the Telos Alliance. All right, it's Kirk Harnack here, and episode 278 of This Week in Radio Tech. Chris Tobin, you still with us, buddy?
I'm here,
oh,
yes.
Oh, good. All right. Well, you know, we're friends with Scott Feibusch. He has been a friend to broadcasters, especially in the Northeast, but all over the place, really, for years and years. He's very old now. He's been bringing us Northeast Radio Watch for a long time. And of course, my favorite thing, the Tower Site Calendar. Let's bring Scott Feibusch in. Is he there? We got video? Hello? Oh, there he is. Hey, you look great, man. How are you?
There it is. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm terrific. Yeah. Hey, did you get a new camera? Because it does look good.
We are finally HD here. Yes. It took a little while, but that old thing is somewhere in the trash where it belongs.
Oh, good deal. Man, like I said, it's great to see you. I'm glad to have you back on the show. You and I ran into each other in Atlanta, right?
We sure did. I was part of the show with the WSB transmitter. That was fun. That was a great night.
Yeah. And I think that's where I got my copy of this.
I do believe it is.
Yeah. You were kind enough to hand this to me, and I'm going to go ahead and send you the payment for this. I promise you.
Most kind of you. Well, they are available.
You deserve it.
Lisa will be along in a little bit to tell you a little bit more about it, but they are available. We've got all of them here in boxes. I want the boxes out of the house and off to you and engineers who can enjoy it all over the country and all over the world. We get orders from all over the world every year. It's amazing.
Well, since we'll bring Lisa on in a couple minutes, let's go ahead and change subjects and talk about the event next week. the 50th anniversary of the Master Antenna on the Empire State Building. And, you know, I'm going to duck out of this conversation. I want you and Tobin to talk about this. Tobin's there. I'm going to go there and just be a kid in a candy store. And so why don't you two guys talk about this event and the history a little bit of the antenna?
Sounds good. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Hey, Scott. Well, let's see the antenna. If you you look at the building, you'll see the little T-shaped figures. There's 16 of them. Actually, 32 total, 16 upper and lower. So they're dipoles. They're at a 45-degree angle. And if I remember correctly, because I have it somewhere in one of my boxes, an actual document about how the building, the antenna was designed, the patterns it was tested with. It's an elliptical pattern, believe it or not. So it was the first attempt at trying to create a circularly polarized master antenna system. And I believe the patent, if I look at this correctly, was written for stacked arrays for broadcasting elliptically polarized waves. That was the Alfred
antenna. That's about right. We're going to be hearing a lot about that. One of the guys on the panel, and I'm really excited about this, is going to be Tom Silliman from ERI. And Tom's dad had a role, along with Andrew Alford, in the design of this thing. Originally, I was up there. I had the chance. I shamelessly took advantage. I took my kids down to the city a couple of weekends ago and arranged a tour into some of the little bits that you normally don't get into. And we were looking up above the 102nd floor, and you can see the whole spider web of feed points to each of these antenna elements. Each one is phase rotated 22.5 degrees from the one next to it. And so, yeah, creates circular polarization. I mean, for 1965, this is an amazing design.
Oh yeah, it was. It broke all kinds of rules. Stories I've read over the years. I've worked in the building. I worked for stations that were on the Alfred antenna system that was part of the main system before it was decommissioned. Became the backup broadband system for the new master antenna back in, was it 1984, 85? And it's funny because, you know, those of us in the audience that are RF people, so you're familiar with diplexes, duplexing, and combining RF signals, and you have these cavities, filters. They're very large at FM frequencies. The wavelength is about 5 to 8 feet. So you got to think of 12 radio stations. Where do you place these canisters that are about, 5 to 6 feet tall and have to be multiples of them for each frequency and the whole bit? Well, they were stacked in the catwalks between below the 102nd floor and above the 86th floor in the section of the building that is what looks like a piece of metal, which it is, and that's where the vertical lights, the fluorescent lights, were at the time. So you had catwalks, and in between the E levels, you would call them, and that's where the filters were. So trust me, when we did overnight work and you drop something, it went down several floors to the very top of the building, which was, I think, 81 or something like that. So it was several stories straight down of a catwalk. So you made sure your tools were lanyards on them, like the Royal Canadian Mounted Police with their firearms. It was fun work.
I learned a lot that I didn't know. The building pulled out a bunch of their archives, and I had the chance to go down and spend an afternoon looking through some of these. And we're going to be showing off some bits and pieces of them during the presentation, which is going to be neat. One of the things I never knew, at the time the Alfred went up, the TV stations, the World Trade Center hadn't been built yet, and the TV stations had big transmitters that took up most of a floor for each one. And so they weren't sure where they were going to put all these FM transmitter rooms. There was actually a plan that was sketched out early on, because they started planning this as early as 1959. There's a plan sketched out where they were going to carve out individual little FM transmitter rooms on each of those E levels. Can you imagine trying to work with that?
Yes. Actually, I remember working up there and talking to some of the folks, and Tom Silliman from ERI, some of the stories he would tell us, and it was just amazing. I mean, when you think about the time or the phrase state of the art, okay, so 1965, state of the art, and here they are putting on top of one of the world's largest buildings an antenna system for multiple FMs, something that was never really done, I guess, on that scale when you think of it. And to achieve it at that height, and those of us, and Scott, you've been up there, so you know what it's like. The weather conditions at the top of that building are never predictable. It can be a beautiful, sunny day down street level. But when you get up top, it could be sometimes foggy, or it could be very windy. And sometimes the moisture gets just enough that if it's during the fall, it could feel like rain or ice on your skin. So that must have been an amazing task to do what they did with that system.
Oh, absolutely. And then with tourists there on the 102nd floor, with the radiating elements all around them. If you stand on the public 102nd floor observation deck, and you know exactly where to peek, you can look down, you can look up, and you can actually see those elements right there around you. And I'm imagining when that was first powered up at full power, that must have been quite something.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the running joke for years was, you know, standing between the radiators. But those, I think at some point they changed out the glass to be somewhat more attenuative. I don't know
they
if you
did.
Can see this.
They did.
That's a picture of one of the Alfreds at 45 degrees, the T-shaped, sticking out. That's taken definitely from the 102nd floor observation deck.
And there are 32 of those in two rings around.
16 on upper and lower rings, yes. Total, yeah. 32 total.
Wow.
Yeah. I'll dig up that little booklet I have for the antenna system. I'll find it. I'll show it to you when you come to town. But
I'll let you in on another secret, too, that David may or may not have mentioned, is that the bays that are up there right now are actually replacements. One of the original 1965 Alfred bays is in the possession of Tom Silliman and will actually be available if you come to this, if you get those tickets, like Dave mentioned, you got to get them early at the Javits Center. But if you get one and you're able to come up and join us, I believe you'll actually be able to see and touch and get up close and personal, maybe get your picture taken with one of those original Alfred elements. And I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, that's going to be fun. That'll be great to do. Yeah, they did the replacements and upgrades, I believe, in 1984, somewhere around there, so it can handle more power, or a little earlier than that. So yeah,
it was part of the whole, there was a change in Canadian rules that allowed them to add a little more power, as I recall.
Yes, that's correct. So
Tom will be talking about that, too. That's part of his presentation.
Yeah. No, Tom's got some great stuff, and he's got some great pictures, and there's always that famous one of him on the top of the spire. You know, picture of somebody taking a picture looking down at him, and below him is the streets of New York City. So it's good stuff. It'll be a great time.
A nightmare for acrophobes everywhere.
True.
Acrophobes. Is that fear of heights?
Fear of heights.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you've ever been up on the catwalk at the top of the, just below the spire, above the ice shield, it's about 5 feet of a, you know, metal framing catwalk with a wire rope there. For a banister, if you will, a railing. And then there's about, I think, 20 feet of building around you. That's it. So the two or three times I've had the opportunity to go out on the hatch, which is the very base. So it's, you know, if you want for a rough reference, very rough reference, the you know, King Kong in the original movie where he's at the top of the Empire State Building, the little circle windows, that's the portholes that you go out. And to be up there at, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning on a clear night with only about 20 feet or 15 feet of building, it's unbelievable. And it's just the thought of working up there and building that whole system and what they did in 1960 must have been just fascinating.
Wow.
just being out on 103, I was out on 103 last week, and that was amazing.
Oh, 103 is great. Yeah, even upside inside the mooring mast and seeing all that work and all did you see all the handwritten notes and the dates and everybody scribbled in? It's great stuff.
A lot of familiar names inside that that top dome there.
Yeah.
Now, you guys have seen something very few people have, I guess. The inside of the dome and the top of Empire.
Yes.
Wow. All right, I just can't believe how lucky I am to be able to go. I hope I can get in. We're planning on trying to do the Torch show either. We're going to try to get up there before the event starts and do the Torch show from there, and we'll talk to people as they come in. That's kind of the plan. Don't know if it's going to come together. We may have to go with a plan B or even a plan C. I don't know what kind of connectivity we're going to get, but anyway, Chris Tobin and I are going to try to plan something out for that. So, Scott, do you have your lovely wife handy anywhere?
I do. I'm going to step out of the frame here and let her step in. It's a little crowded. I have to clean my office, this place. I'm not panning the camera around. You don't want to see it. But
That's fine. Hey, we'll switch off here. My camera around either. That's fine.
We'll get Lisa in here for you. Here she is.
All right.
Yes, we're lucky that Skype is a very tight shot.
Hey, Lisa, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm glad you're here. You didn't make it down to Atlanta with Scott, though, right?
No, that conflicted too much with school and other commitments. Too hard. I will be there. I will be in New York next week, though.
Good. Okay, we'll get to see you there. So I'm holding up in front of me this calendar. And I got to tell you, I'm not going to
you know, be a spoiler here and show all the pictures or anything.
But sure.
You know what, one of my favorite things is we've been talking this show here about Empire State Building, and look what's in the back of this calendar.
Yeah.
My goodness. We always
try to go for a really good vertical shot. That turned out very well.
That is an awesome shot. Look at all the antennas. And think of being the landlord. Think of all the rent.
Oh, yes.
Right there. Oh, my goodness. Look at all those tenants.
Yep.
So, Lisa, I'm going to let you have at it. What can you tell us about the 2016 calendar?
This is our, I think, 15th edition. We have a new design this year with new colors. We try to have the colors go with the tower photos and also with the season, so I think they complemented nicely. And we always try to have towers from all around the country. So even though it's Northeast Radio Watch, it's not Northeast Tower Site Calendar. The January photo is Miami, which is not Northeast. And so even though the centerfold is the Empire State Building, we have other regions. And the one on the cover is WVVB?
WWV.
WWV in Colorado. So again, which was this one was the featured of our Name the Tower contest.
Okay.
For the first time this year, we actually had people guess the cover photo. And if you guessed correctly, you won the calendar. So
we should have had Tom Ray, because Tom visited that place. You know, one of our former regulars on the show. Now he's an extra special guest when he comes by. But Tom gave us a report from WWV when he went and visited there. Gave us a nice photo tour. Yeah. I've driven by there, but I didn't get that close at all.
No. Scott got lucky that way. But we have pictures from all over the region. I don't think we have any international ones this year. Oh, no, there is one Canadian, yes. So we're international, too. And we also, for people may not know this, we always try to coordinate the photo with the time of year. So your January through March photos are likely to be sometime in the winter.
So hard
to tell again with the January cover because it's Miami.
Yeah.
And, of course, we have the radio history on all of the squares, and people enjoy that. And as I said, for all the completists, this is our 15th year doing it. You can buy the calendar. We also have a limited edition. This is, I think, the fifth year or so that we've been doing that. 40 of our calendars are autographed by Scott, and they are hand numbered.
Cool.
So you
mentioned something about the squares, and by that you're talking about the dates where there's all kinds of events, like who signed on here and there. Here's one from December 15th. It says, in 1986, WNYJ 98.3 Rotterdam, New York, now WTRY, signs on.
Yes.
Now, can I submit dates to you for stations that I'm familiar with that you guys may not be familiar with?
Oh, definitely, because we try to keep it fresh, so yes. If there are dates you want to send in, absolutely send them in.
Oh, so will you see the same ones year to year, or you said you try to keep them fresh?
No, they're not the same ones year to year.
Oh,
but just trying to get different ones for every calendar is a lot of work and then there's always, of course, some questions about just trying to get the records and all of that. So, if there's a date, you know, we definitely are interested in it.
Okay.
We're also, of course, open to anybody suggesting tower photos, too, if they will, of course, give us a tour.
Okay.
So.
I don't know if you can make it down to Mississippi, but I can sure take you to a couple tower sites there. We've got...
Oh, yes, that would certainly be good. Scott's been to Mississippi. I haven't. And
in fact,
I don't think Scott saw everything in Mississippi either.
One of our sites in Mississippi over the next... I don't know, 6, 9, 12 months, we're going to be making it from a single FM site into a 4-transmitter site. It's in a little wide spot in the road called Heads, HEADS.
Oh, wow.
Heads, Mississippi.
That would be a cool site.
And there's no business there. No, there's a farmhouse and our transmitter. And
yes, that would be great.
Yeah, well, and it's a good-looking tower.
Yeah, I mean, preaching to the converted here, I don't have to tell you about the artistic quality, but we do hope that people who don't work in the business also appreciate the aesthetics of the photos. We try not to do just a whole bunch of sticks. We have different towers, and we try to get good lighting. We try to get as much of the landscape in as possible. So we're trying to show that the towers and the settings of the towers are pretty.
Yeah. Yeah, they sure are. And you've got some great ones for beauty here.
Thank you.
Here's the website. Why don't you tell us about your website and how folks can order?
Yes, fibush.com. We also offer subscriptions to our website. For that, you get access to Northeast Radio Watch every week, plus all of our archives. But if you just want to buy the calendar, you go to fibush.com and you click on the link to the store, and that will take you right to the calendars. And the this year's edition, the limited edition, we have some previous calendars of some years if you missed one. If people keep them, we actually also now sell archival bags, so you don't just have to stick it in a paper folder. You can actually put it in a plastic bag and keep it nice and neat.
Cool. For your
collection. It's proved to be popular, too. And for subscribing to our site, you register with our site, and then there's different subscriptions you can do. If you work in the industry at the professional level, the subscription comes with a free calendar, so that's actually a pretty good deal.
Ah, it is. It is. Okay. Lisa, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you for getting your husband cleaned up. And,
you're and welcome. Looking good. Thank for you for our having show. Me.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to seeing Scott. And you said you'll be there too, right, in New York?
Yes, I will be there too.
Good deal. Hey, Scott.
Hey, how you doing?
Any last words for us, Scott?
Buy the calendar.
Yes, buy the calendar.
We will have New York, too. If people catch us around AES, we will have them with us.
We will.
I'll sign them for you right on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
And by all means, this is going to be just, I cannot tell you how excited everybody involved in this session is. It's going to be something. I'm really, really thrilled to be part of it.
Cool. I agree. Hey, short notice. Thanks for making arrangements to be on with us. And I appreciate your addition, what you had to say about the event, the 50th anniversary event of the Master Antenna at Empire State. And as David Bialik said, go sign up for that at the Tech Tours desk the very moment that you put your feet in New York City. Get to the Javits Center, sign up for the Tech Tours desk, and only 75 people will be able to go to that. There are other tech tours of things going on, too, that David Bialik talked about. All right, Five Bushes, Mr. and Mrs. Scott and Lisa, thanks again for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Hey, it's Kirk Harnack on This Week in Radio Tech, along with Chris Tobin. And Chris, I challenged Chris to come up with some little story information, kind of a sense of what's going on. Oh, building the Empire State. They rediscovered 1930s notebook. Well, that looks good. Cool. Chris, why don't we... I know Skype is like backwards. Mooring mast. What book is that? Is that something you stole from the building?
No, not of course. No, everywhere I go, I always look for history stuff. I'm all about that. Just talks about the mooring mast. That's before everything got affixed to it. And they talked about the top of the mooring mast where they were caulking, getting it ready for the radio antenna.
Caulking? Well, yeah. I guess there's some caulk involved to get it ready.
Yeah. And then one of the fun facts of the total length of elevators hoisting ropes, over 120 miles.
Jeez.
That's the distance from Philadelphia to New York City, roughly.
That much rope to hoist up antennas?
That's for the elevators to operate.
Oh, for the building. The
elevators operate in the building.
Let's run all the elevators down the basement and take the ropes and see if they'll reach to Philadelphia.
So the fun time in the city and Halloween. What's that, a week away?
Do you think Governor Christie will let us across the bridge on our way?
I'm sure for a price.
For a price, okay, so Chris, what's going on in New York? What are engineers having to do this time of year? We just got a couple minutes. I asked you to do this, so let's hear a story or two about that.
All right. Well, this time of year, it's October, near the end of October, you have Halloween, so you have the Greenwich Parade in Greenwich Village. So that in itself is just it's fun to watch, to see, to participate, but covering it can be daunting. But that's going to be fun. That's this coming Saturday, not this two Saturdays from now, and then. Yeah. We have Thanksgiving Day Parade, so the Macy's Day Parade will be happening later in November. And then and now, we have haunted houses throughout the tri-state area that people do broadcasts from. So, setting up for that, planning these things, you usually start early. Also, the fall classic, known to many baseball fans, the World Series has come to New York City. The New York Mets have made it into the World Series. just a matter of who they'll be playing, whether it's Toronto or Kansas City. And that's going to be a big event for everybody to cover. So the sports stations who already have an entrenched infrastructure for covering the normal ball games through the season, that's easy. It's all the other visiting press or media that will be showing up and trying to cover the event. So folks are planning for that right now. So it's going to be a very busy month and a half or 2 months left in the year. So it's going to be good. So, and then there's the tree lighting at Rockefeller Center that takes place the first week of December. So just after you've done the Macy's Day Parade coverage, you sort of following week, you're doing the tree lighting. So it gets busy.
You know, now that you mentioned these things, and I forgot about a couple, you know, we sure know about grow up with the Macy's Day, Thanksgiving Day Parade and the lighting of the tree. But now you kind of bring home the point. All this stuff happens in New York City.
Yes.
And so, you know, those of us out here in the hinterlands, like Nashville, Tennessee, we enjoy these things coming in on our television sets. It used to be radio, you know, late at night, I guess we'd hear New York stations. But we don't think about the job that engineers have to do in covering all this stuff or providing facilities to get it all covered for radio and for television. That can be a lot of setup and teardown.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Matter of fact, most of what I mentioned, the pre-planning for that's already taken place.
Sure.
You know, when you get closer, you start solidifying everything. But the only thing that wasn't planned for, but there's always a scratchbook for it, is for the World Series coverage, whether it's the New York Yankees or the New York Mets. But this year it's the Mets. So folks are going to be getting ready for that. I know Channel 11, the Tribune station, WPIX, was already doing some coverage at the ballpark today and talking about all that's going on. And they were at the ballpark at Citi Field, where the Mets play, in Queens. And then they also had a live OB or outside broadcast shot from the Mets merchandising store in Times Square. So they already have geared up and begun their broadcast and getting around town. So it's starting.
So in a city like New York, of course you've got your sports stations and your talk stations and your news stations there. Do music-oriented stations, do they do a lot of outside broadcasts from venues around the holidays?
Depending on the format, you know, a station like, say, a CBS FM, as David Bialik mentioned earlier, which is an oldies format, or I shouldn't say oldies, it's probably more contemporary, they will do broadcast from places that make sense for family-oriented stuff. Some of the other music stations will do the same thing. There's a lot of places that folks go to. There are farmers markets in the city that people come to. They happen all year round, the farmers market, but when it comes to the holiday season, things get a little more spiced up, so it's fun. So, yes, the music stations do tend to find places to go and do stuff and interact with the audience.
Cool. Boy. Lots of remote broadcasts, lots of IP, and you still have a good ISDN there? Can you order that and get ISDN where you want it in the city?
You can get it. It's not that easy. It's a PRI ISDN or a PBX ISDN, depending on who you talk to. It's not the traditional PRI. But the IP, the cellular stuff is working really well. I know several stations that are using the cellular modem approach, and it's functioning quite well. So, you got to plan it out. If you have ISDN already, most stations keep it. They don't lose it. But getting it can be difficult at times.
So part of what you're going to be telling us when you're on our panel, and it's an hour and a half long panel, there should be time for everyone to give their story and tell about their various their area of expertise about using telcos for remote broadcasts over IP. So I'll be looking forward to what you have to say in your particular experience there in New York City. And then other people will be coming in, you know, from other areas of expertise, like Tony Peterle or Paul Schulens from Boston.
From Boston,
Our friend Andrew Zarian, who deals with Skype almost every day. Actually, we should probably bring Suncast in because he's dealing with Skype almost every day, too, as to, you know, when it works and when it doesn't. That interview I did with David Bialik, we tried to do that with Skype, and it would not. It was horrible, just horrible. And you may know some reasons why. We don't have to go into that, but we did a Google Hangout, and the quality was as good as I've ever seen.
What did he? Was he at his office at his
I
day,
can neither
day
confirm
job?
Nor deny.
I could tell by the office furniture and the phone he was using. So that's why you were having problems.
Yeah, yeah, I understand. And so, yeah, hey, there's IT people in the mix here that, you know, maybe need to have a conversation with them to see, you know, we're trying to do media here, folks. We need some media. Well,
I could tell you that I did 2 weeks ago, I did a ad hoc last minute IP link broadcast setup for two hosts of an internet radio show. And we did it from a large broadcaster's facility, and we had to quickly switch from their in-house infrastructure of IT, IP, to the engineering office's Time Warner modem because of the packet filtering or shaping or, you know, things they were doing to Skype.
I was wondering how that happened, and now you've explained a lot. So, good a Skype coming out of there.
we had to pull a few rabbits out for that one. But
Hey, hang on, we got a tip or something coming up here in just a minute. Our show this week in Radio Tech is brought to you by the folks at Lavo and the Lavo Crystal Clear Audio Console. Now I got to tell you about this is very cool technology. And first of all, go to lavo.com, L-A-W-O. It's a German company, so pronounce it Lavo, but it's L-A-W-O. And go to the radio consoles pages and look for the Crystal Clear. Now, on this page, it's been updated. It's got a new video on the upper right-hand side there of Mike Dosh, and he is talking about the features of the Crystal Clear audio console. Now, like so many consoles nowadays that are IP based or have IP capability, you've got a rack mount box that has your local inputs and outputs, microphones. It's got inputs. It's got some headphone outputs. It's got line level in and out, AES in and out, and it's got an Ethernet port. The Ethernet port speaks any standard Ethernet protocol like HTTP, so you can browse into the console's electronics and set things up. But it also speaks the AOIP standard called Ravenna. It's a European-based standard, and Ravenna is compatible with AES-67. And so the console also is compatible with AES-67, meaning you can make it now talk to other AES-67 devices or other audio consoles or systems that are AES-67 compliant or compatible. So that's the gist of the console, the rack mount part that has dual redundant power supplies available. Again, all your audio inputs and outputs. And the mixing electronics are all in there. The DSP, the audio processing for the microphones, the electronics and the algorithms that make for the automatic functions, like the auto gain set. So you get somebody comes into your studio and maybe they're particularly loud and boisterous. Well, you get them to talk for a moment while you push a button, and guess what? Their gain level for their mic is automatically set. You get somebody who's a little bit quiet and a little bit shy, and maybe they shy away from the microphone. You get them to talk, you push their button, and their gain level is set so that you can put your faders up to their normal level and get a normal level from everybody. You also have the idea of backfeed. So every source that's coming in can have a backfeed going back out. So for headphones or earbuds for your talent, or for a mix minus going out to a codec or a hybrid, you get this automatically happening. And you also have the ability to make scenes or shows in the console. So the control surface, now I know I talked first about the rack mount part. The control surface is a multi-touch touchscreen monitor, and it's got a PC built in the back of it, and that PC is running this app that makes a gorgeous 8-fader console on the screen. Lots of room. Your fingers are not going to make mistakes. It's easy to touch things on the console, and when you do touch a button to make a change or set up something up, what you get is a menu that is contextual. It knows what mode you're in, what you're doing. It knows about the source that you have that the button's associated with, and so it gives you the options that are associated with that source and what you want to do with that source. Check it out if you would. Go to Lavo, LAWO.com, and look for that Crystal Clear console, and watch the little video there from Mike Dosh talking about the Crystal Clear and its features and capabilities. If you want a touchscreen radio console, there you go. Your dream has arrived. All right, Chris Tobin, any last minute tips or techniques for us here?
Last minute tip, I did a broadcast a week ago from a park. It went very well. It was over IP. We tapped into the park's Wi-Fi system. Hold on, don't go crazy on me just yet. So what I did was the Wi-Fi system had a point of presence coming in, so the main feed coming in for the IP broadband. We tapped into that switch and then used a hard line across using Yellow Jacket cable management over to the stage, and we did our broadcast, stereo music broadcast from that event over IP. However, what I also did as a tip, I logged into my codec device using the park's Wi-Fi, which they gave me a nice That's I'm right now logged into a codec, and that's a Digicam Icoya. And I use this screen to get to keep track of the audio levels being fed to the studio, so the board op I could call in advance if there's any issues, or just keep an eye on the fact that I'm on the air and things are working, so I could walk around and check and see if everything else at the event was taking place with the radio station that I was working with. So the Wi-Fi was used for monitoring and control, but the hardwired Ethernet from the same broadband connection was used for the payload or the broadcast itself, and it went flawless. The lost number of packets over a three-hour period, lost packets was 75. The disorder packets was zero. Jitter time never got any higher than about a half a millisecond. So, you know, things were going really well. So it was, actually, it was in nanoseconds at one point. But, yeah. So my tip is if you're doing an outside event, outside broadcast, and you are doing it on IP, try to do a wired connection. Take a different approach when you get to that Wi-Fi location. Say, hey, guys, can we tap into your switch that feeds the Wi-Fi radio system?
Yeah, that's a great idea. Ask. Yeah. Ask.
You know, and believe it or not, the folks that manage the park, it's a private organization, when I talk to their IT department, they're like, wow, we've never had anybody ask. They always ask us for special Wi-Fi stuff we tell them we can't do because Wi-Fi is not designed that way. That's why I'm asking for the hardwired spot. So sure enough, in the back of the little administration building on the park premises, they had a switch, and I just took an extra port, and they assigned an IP address, gave me quality of service to that port, made sure I had some bandwidth, and off we went. They loved it. Yeah. They were happy to work with us on that level because they didn't want to have to deal with the Wi-Fi because that was all for the public, the visiting folks.
That's such a great idea. It really
is. It worked.
And I'm just thinking now, okay, there is a bar venue in downtown Nashville that a local station does a broadcast from, or they had been doing one every week. I think they still do. And they had been using Wi-Fi with their codec, their IP codec. And I believe that at some point they did ask, you know, instead of the Wi-Fi, could we run a cable? And so they came in, you know, during the week when the bar was empty of people, and they ran a cable over to the mixing position and where their codec was. And so that makes sense. I was just thinking, so many venues you go to, public or large public spaces, church down the road here, they have Wi-Fi throughout the church. But I just remember I've been in there and I know where the closet is. So obviously they got a closet that's got a switch that you could hose into. And all you got to do is ask, hey, we're going to do a live broadcast. Can we, instead of using the Wi-Fi, which I know would be a no-brainer, but it may not work very well for us. Can we just plug into the switch?
And for those of you in the audience who I know right now is saying, yeah, but I don't have access to get a wire to run in the bar and go from the back room or downstairs up from the basement over to where we are. Here's what you think about. You go to the same location to that switch. You plug in your Ubiquiti, okay, the Ubiquiti 5.8 radio, into that port, and then you create your own link over to your outside broadcast position within the building.
Yes.
So now you've got the wired access, but you control the link. You're not working with their Wi-Fi because you have no idea who else is using it. You're using your own, and you've got a great point-to-point because we all know that those boxes with the spectrum.
In the bar, on the regular public Wi-Fi, there's somebody in there, you know, running their own BitTorrent client on a phone, right? And it's just pinging away. And so, yeah, that's right. So you go to the switch. Well, if they were at a BitTorrent, you maybe out of luck anyway. But you go to the switch, and you're right. For literally under $200, maybe closer to $150, you put a Wi-Fi access point in there that only you know about. Well, you and the people that own the building. And the SSID is hidden, and
you do a secure password, and you're off to the races.
Perfect. What a great idea. I should have thought of that. That's just a great.
Trust me, it works. I've done it.
Yes. And just go get both ends of it from. There's other ones besides Ubiquiti, but they make great stuff that we know. We know it works pretty well.
I only said that because I've used the product. I know it works, and it gives you a lot of tools to work with. There are several others. Redline is another one. So there are several other products out there, but the ones I've used, and I can at least honestly say that it worked. It was the Ubiquiti ones.
Good deal. We are so out of time. Thank you, Suncast, for staying on a little bit later. This has been This Week in Radio Tech, episode 278. We've had, of course, Chris Tobin with us, the best dressed engineer in radio. Chris, if folks want to reach you, not that you have any time to give away to anybody but for your consulting business, but they can reach you where?
It just support at ipcodex.com. I'm more than happy to respond back. We've had a few emails lately for some stuff. It's been didn't take too long to answer, so it was helpful.
Good deal. Good deal. So if you need to know about doing anything over IP technology, which is the coming thing, ask Chris about it. Support at ipcodex.com. I'm Kirk Harnack. I work for the folks at the Telos Alliance at telosalliance.com. Suncast has been our producer, and I appreciate that. And Andrew Zarian, founder and owner of the GFQ Network. Appreciate his consistency and keeping our letting our show be on here every week. We really appreciate it. And we'll see you in New York next week. If you're going to be there, find us and say hi. And be sure you come to our session on Saturday afternoon at 3:15 about remote IP connectivity, I think it is, and doing your broadcast that way. Thanks to also David Bialik, Scott, and Lisa Feinbusch. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.